It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, UW-Madison law professor reviews a state Supreme Court ruling that police have probable cause to arrest someone and search them in their car if they say they smell marijuana. Now it's Food Friday. We're in the peak of the summer farmers market season. Local food producers are selling their fresh produce, meats, and dairy on stands across Wisconsin. Sometimes it can be a little intimidating, overwhelming to pick through what to buy, when to buy it, where it came from, who to get it from. Our next guest says getting fresh foods from our small businesses is important for supporting local economies and communities and our health. You can join in at 800-642-1234. How much of your food, your produce, comes from local farms maybe in your area? Where do you get it? Do you go to farmers markets, that farm stand? Do you have a helpful neighbor who grows lots? Or maybe you've got a great garden in your own backyard? Join in at 800-642-1234. Or if you sell at a local farmers market, love to hear from you. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Elena Terry is a member of the Ho-Chunk Nation and executive chef and founder of Wild Berries, a Wisconsin nonprofit working to strengthen tribal communities through food and education. Elena, welcome back to the show.
Hello, thank you for having me.
Well, a big part of the story here, Elena, isn't just the food itself. You're really interested in how local consumers can connect with their local food producers. Can you talk about that a little?
Absolutely. I feel as a chef and also as a mother having a household that I run, it's important for us to support local economies and also to support those who are doing responsible agricultural practices. Going against this large corporation, large agriculture, and showing up at the farmers markets locally with some of the best produce that you can find anywhere. I mean, we're in a really beautiful space in Wisconsin, and that almost every town on the square has a farmers market during the summer. And being able to know when those markets are, you can have the freshest, most delicious produce almost all season long.
Now, sometimes at a farmer's market, like I love that I'm supporting local farmers, but I'm like, okay, I gave them $5 for these radishes or whatever. It doesn't feel like I'm doing a lot to support the local economy, just buying a little bit of produce here and there. Does it really add up to enough to really support that thriving local economy?
It really does. And you have to think about the quality of the products that you're buying for that $5 and know that like that $5 times 20 people that come through in a day for a bunch of radishes does have an impact on what that farmer is able to receive economically for income, because there's a lot of farmers in our area that don't have the capacity to be able to sell massive amounts of food, but love being a part of this small town beauty that we have in our state and being able to show up and be proud of what they've grown or how they've grown it. And I really see that there's a shift in the way we look at our food when we invest in local economies and we know the people who are growing our food. You value the ingredients a little bit more. And I've noticed in my household, it really reduces the amount of food waste that we have.
Now, as a chef you and an educator, you might encounter people who, you know, may know how to cook with this and that, but, you know, don't know what to do with this piece of produce. I mean, I'm still there sometimes with when I encounter some new produce. How do you encourage people to, you know, try something new, add something into their repertoire that they find, say, at the farmer's market or the local stand at their grocery store?
I mean, nowadays you can find a recipe in an instant on your phone. And I think that when you open your mind to different flavors and possibilities. I mean, you're not going to like everything, but I found that you like most things, you know, unless it's an incredibly exotic flavor or texture that might be incredibly unfamiliar or unpleasant, which not a lot of people would be selling at the farmer's market. You're able to find some really neat alternatives or supplements to what your normal menu might be when you're making dinner at home or if you're bringing something to a potluck. I think it's really incredible when you get to think outside of the box when it comes to ingredients and how you treat them also, because there's a lot of different ways other than what you might contemporarily think of how to make say summer squash or zucchini. And I think once you start exploring, you just naturally want to explore more and you want to try more and find more. And I think when you give yourself the grace to say, I'm not going to like everything that I try, it gives you a little bit more flexibility and it makes it a lot more fun.
It's Food Friday. We're talking to Elena Terry, executive chef and founder of Wild Berries. We are taking advantage of Wisconsin's summer produce, headed to the farmer's market, the farm stand, the local section at your local grocery store, and you could join in at 800-642-1234. Are you a fan of farmers markets or your particular local farmer's market? What are you seeing there or in your garden or in your local grocery store that has you excited this time of year? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Let's bring on a caller now. Vivian is with us in Green Bay. Vivian, hi.
Hello. I love farmers markets. Shop them all summer long and even into the winter sometimes. But I get a second food source when I go to the farmer's market and buy a bunch of beets or a bunch of radishes. The greens are so tender and delicious and fresh, they're not wasted. They're in my salads, they're sauteed. Typically, when I buy them at the grocery store, those greens go to waste because they're not very good.
Vivian, thanks a lot for the call. Or often they're not on the product anymore in the first place at the grocery store. Elena, being able to use more of the produce in the first place when we get them fresh at the farmer's market.
Yes, absolutely. And I was hoping that somebody would say that because those greens on the top of even like the carrots, the beets, there's chard, there's so many different greens that are just jam-packed with nutrients and vitamins that a lot of people do discard, and they are delicious. Some of them have a little bit of spice, some have a little bit more of the green chlorophyll-y taste, but they're also distinctly different that you can definitely use those and make them into, say, a salad. Or I really enjoy grilling my greens because it gives it a little bit more of a smokier flavor, and I like the bitter to contrast whatever dressing I'm putting on it. But it really does allow you to think outside the box in what you're using or what you're purchasing and how you will use that produce from the market. Great suggestion.
Vivian, thanks a lot for that call at 800-642-1234. I want to talk about a couple other possible sources of that local produce, Elena. A lot of people in some parts of the states are part of these CSAs, community-supported agriculture farms. Are those an important part of that local farm economy scene?
Absolutely, they are. And the best part of CSAs is because everybody gets kind of the same base boxes. So it's a great way to share recipes, to spark conversation with others, and also with your growers. If there is something that you're unfamiliar with or intimidated by, it's a wonderful place to get it in a CSA because a lot of times they will include supplemental recipes or suggested uses of those maybe unfamiliar pieces of produce. And so, like, great way to explore when it's included in a package that you get of fresh produce. And I can't say enough about CSAs. I love that there are farms that are putting these together and distributing throughout, the communities and making that fresh produce accessible.
How about restaurants turning to local produce? We see a lot more farm-to-table types of things, or even some restaurants just, when they can get some ingredients, even if they're not going full-on farm-to-table. Are you seeing that grow over the years?
Yes, especially coming out of COVID and really being able to take a hard look at what our food system is and how we're sourcing food and where the bottom line of that economic, the equation of how the economy works and the way we are able to help support that locally. I mean, it's a win-win relationship when restaurants are willing to do that and when the farmer is willing to go through all of the things that they need to do to be able to pass with food code. And there's a lot of like certifications that need to happen. But once that's done, I mean, it is an incredible way to source locally. And I have worked in restaurants and have been part of menu development in those spaces where we are able to source locally. And like, what an incredible position to be in, to be able to say, like, oh, this is the freshest and it's the most delicious right now. How can I put something together that will honor not only this ingredient and what it's bringing to the table, but also how can we bring awareness and honor those who are growing such incredible produce for us? And so it really is a great way to highlight that work that doesn't really get recognized as much as I think it should.
It's Food Friday. We're talking to Wildberries founder and executive chef Elena Terry about local farm fresh foods this summer. Coming up, we're going to start naming some more names, things we're excited to see at the farmers market right now. And you can join in at 800-642-1234. Is there a piece of seasonal produce that you are excited to see out there right now or that you're looking forward to over the next few weeks? Do you have a favorite farmers market you want to put in a plug for? Do you sell at a farmer's market? Love to hear from you as well. Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@wpr.org. We'll pick up the conversation coming up here on Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our Food Friday talk with Elena Terry, executive chef and founder of the tribal community outreach group Wild Berries. And she's with us today for a look at local produce at our local small businesses, our summertime farmers markets. Still time for you to join in at 800-642-1234. What kind of foods do you like to buy from local farmers? Where do you get them? At farmers markets, a CSA, your local store, that farm stand. Put in a plug for your source of local Wisconsin produce at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@wpr.org. Elena was talking to one of our colleagues here at WPR earlier, told her about our Food Friday. She mentioned being excited about strawberries this time of year. Now, you and I have had a whole conversation about berries in the summer. What are you watching for right now?
Oh, right now, definitely the berries are. I've been getting a lot of rhubarb also, which of course is a perfect match for strawberries. So seeing some of those come out is incredible. I was really excited when I saw one of my growers had posted her first harvest of rainbow carrots. So I know that we're kind of transitioning as, you know, the summer gets a little warmer and the days are a little longer on what we're able to get. But I really do like the leafy greens that come. And I got a bag of spinach 2 weeks ago that was incredible. It was so delicious. We used all of it. We were like the fettuccine Alfredo with spinach or lasagna with spinach, and we had spinach salad. It was just so good. Absolutely delicious things at the market. And I don't want to forget saying that, you know, there's so many local artisans that also sell at the local farmers markets, like specialty breads, or I know at one of my local markets, we have somebody who does honey and maple syrup also, and they're there in the summertime as well. So there's a lot of other things that you are also able to get and support with that local artistry at the farmer's market.
I want to talk about your strategy at farmer's markets, Elena. Do you come with a shopping list? I need blank, blank, and blank. Or do you go with the attitude like, I'm going to see what's there and I'll build some meals around whatever's looking good?
I absolutely go with just a big bag and an open mind. And I love having conversations with the people who sell their goods, because they're the ones who know what is the ripest, what is its peak flavor. And if it's something that I'm unfamiliar with, they're the experts on letting me know what characteristics it has or what it might be paired well with. And that's my starting point. So then I can kind of taste it in different ways and grow with it and develop it. So I'm always open to whatever's the freshest and most readily available to cook that evening at the farmer's market.
Now, that conversation with the farmer, I can get a bit Midwestern and be like, oh, I don't want to be a bother. I'll just buy what I want and move on. Do you find that, though, that farmers and other vendors love to talk about their products to their customers?
Absolutely. Who wouldn't be proud of what they've put a lot of hard work and energy into bringing to the consumer? So I always enjoy, if it's not too busy, sparking up a conversation with those growers. And it does build a relationship. Like, there are certain growers that I started conversations with that are growing specific things now because I was like, you know what I would love to see? And then you have to wait almost an entire, well, you do a whole year to be able to get those onto the table. But when they show up and that person is willing to do the work for you, like those are the relationships that we really need to continue building in community and saying, like, I see you for the work you're doing and I am a fan. How can I continue supporting? Or would you be willing to do this? You know, those are the conversations that really can continue on for years after.
Let's go back to our callers at 800-642-1234. Nick is with us in Green Bay. Nick, hello.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good. What do you want to tell us about?
Well, I just wanted to put in a plug for Farm Fresh Express, which is it's an online local delivery service. So we've got organic, there's organic foods from all local vendors that are delivered from roughly Green Bay down to Milwaukee every week.
And now, are you getting, is it just like you get pieces of produce, or is it, you know, a meal kit sort of thing where you get locally made stuff and a recipe with it? How does it work?
Well, if you just go onto the website and you can pick and choose. So it's whatever you want that week. You don't, there's no recipes or boxes. It's just if you want lettuce, if you want spinach, if you want squash, organic potatoes, whatever you like. We've got organic meats, fishes, all kinds of good stuff.
Nick, thanks for telling us about that. Elena, people getting creative, I think, especially post-COVID, with finding other ways to connect that local farm with local consumers.
Yeah, and I think as long as, you know, one of the biggest things is, especially coming from the dairy land that is has faced some incredible changes in the past 10 years when it comes to agriculture, it's important to support that local growing aspect. So if it's a delivery system that supplies themselves from local organic growers and delivers it, like, wow, I'm gonna look it up too.
Nick, thanks a lot for that call at 800-642-1234. It's Food Friday. We're talking to Elena Terry, executive chef and founder of Wild Berries, looking at why we might want to connect with farmers markets and other sources of local produce, and then what to do with some of that local produce once we get our hands on it. All right, Elena, I want to look into the future now, and I see the future holds tomatoes and zucchini and then some corn. What kind of recipes are you looking forward to making with that produce that's going to be emerging over the next few weeks to a month?
I think when we say the word salad, we have this image in our mind of iceberg lettuce with a tomato wedge and maybe a slice of cucumber. But really, you can make so many incredible things into a salad. And in the summertime, it's very refreshing to have cold, crisp produce with a delicious dressing that I always try to make sure includes a hearty amount of vinegar because that helps our body as well. And when you really think about something like a beet salad or watermelon, I really like fresh herbs and cheese because I'm from Wisconsin, right? Like, there's so many things that you can do to make it pop or go, wow. You could even add canned beans or dried beans that you've cooked to add additional protein to something like a salad. So I always get excited about that possibility and what I can put together that is not only filling, but incredibly nutritious for you.
Now, with watermelon salad, I'm happy just to cube up some watermelon and put it in a bowl and eat it. What kind of things can we do to add some flavor to jazz it up as a salad?
My kids love watermelon salad with feta or goat cheese sprinkled on it, fresh basil, and a balsamic vinegar. And it is almost everything that your palate would need. You know, there's the sweet, the refreshing, a little bit of that tang. You could, if you like, add some spice like chili powder, or there's some other like tahine or something that you might want to put on the refreshing watermelon. But there's so many different combinations that I think I'm going to have to go and get one now because we've been talking about
in your head, yeah.
Thinking about that salad.
And then for beets, now I'm the only one in my household who likes beets, but that's fine. What do you like to mix with beets for a beet salad?
Oh, I personally like very thinly sliced red onions, some cucumbers, because I like my beets to be roasted and then sliced. So I like having a little bit of crunch, maybe some pepitas on top of there. And I like the goat cheese is a really good, mild, smooth cheese that goes with it. What we like to do is I get the baby romaine heads and cut them in half and grill that, and then kind of make it, it's a boat when you take it off the grill, and load it up with all of that fresh vegetables.
That sounds fantastic. And Elena, corn season is coming. We've had a whole conversation about corn. I don't know, when are you looking to hit the corn this year?
Oh my gosh, as soon as it's ready. I absolutely love corn. And yes, we had a whole conversation about it. I'm growing two different varieties right now, and I have other people growing a couple other varieties, but you can't forget the honey dipped or the sweet candy corn that you can get at the farmer's market as well.
Elena, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us.
Thank you for having me. It's always a wonderful conversation with you.
That's Elena Terry, member of the Ho-Chunk Nation, executive chef and founder of Wild Berries. That's B-E-A-R-I-E-S. It's a Wisconsin nonprofit working to strengthen tribal communities through food and education. She joined us today to help us pick some farm fresh food this summer at our local farmers markets, small businesses, and beyond. You can keep sharing your summertime favorites, your favorite farmers market, your favorite produce to buy locally. Let us know. Email ideas@wpr.org. That's ideas@wpr.org. Coming up Monday on the morning show, it's been 1 year since the U.S. Supreme Court reversed the Roe v. Wade decision, putting Wisconsin's abortion ban back into effect. Look at the impacts of the Roe reversal here in the state and beyond. That's coming up Monday morning at 8 here on the Ideas Network. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Barrett. Wisconsin's conservative majority on the state Supreme Court ruled that police are justified to search someone because they smell marijuana in their car. But if there isn't any marijuana recovered from the search, doesn't matter, according to the ruling. The defendant in the case was convicted of fentanyl and cocaine possession after a police search found the substances in bags concealed under his clothing. The dissenting liberal justices say the officers in the case lacked probable cause for a search because marijuana smell is indistinguishable from legal substances like hemp or CBD. We're taking a look at the case and the wider concept of probable cause. And you can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you agree with the court's opinion? Have you been searched by police, or your vehicle has, in part because of the smell of something incriminating? Do you have questions about how probable cause works when it comes to police searches? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@wpr.org. John Gross is a clinical associate professor of law at UW-Madison. He directs the university's Public Defender Project. John, welcome back to Central Time.
Thanks for inviting me.
I want to zoom in on this particular case that came to the state Supreme Court here before we look at wider issues. The short version, police say they saw the defendant driving erratically, threw something out the window, pulling him over, did a quick search, but then smelled marijuana, they say, in the car. That led them to make a closer search, which ultimately found the incriminating evidence. Can you take us through the arguments that we saw as this worked its way up from the initial trials up to the Supreme Court?
Sure. So what's at issue here is whether or not the officers had what's referred to as probable cause to actually make an arrest. If they did have probable cause to arrest the driver of the vehicle, then they could conduct what's called a search incident to that arrest and search his person for any weapons or contraband, because the theory being they were going to take him into custody because they had probable cause to arrest. Now, probable cause is defined as a reasonable ground to believe that the person is committing or has committed a crime. So it's a very flexible standard. It's not just a possibility or a suspicion, but it's not the standard of trial, proof beyond a reasonable doubt. Officers are expected to use their common sense. The sticking point here was the officers claimed to smell marijuana. And while possession of marijuana in Wisconsin is illegal still, and there is a case from about 25 years ago that says that when officers smell marijuana, that is in and of itself probable cause to make an arrest. Recently, marijuana, at least in Wisconsin, other things like hemp and CBD oils and things that can be ingested via vape pens, those things have been legalized and they smell exactly like marijuana. And so the question was, just because the officers smell something like marijuana, can they be sure it's the contraband that contains the chemical THC, or could it be hemp or CBD oil, which is actually legal?
Another concern was the defendant said he had rented the car from someone, pointed out that he personally didn't smell like marijuana. There was the possibility that someone else had previously smoked marijuana in the car that didn't necessarily point toward the defendant having used it himself. Did this come up at any part of this chain of court trials?
Yes. I mean, this is another factor that goes into whether or not the police would have probable cause to believe that they could arrest the person for a marijuana related offense, because the smell of marijuana, especially if it is smoked, can linger. Somebody could have smoked marijuana in the car earlier in the day, which could have led officers to smell marijuana when they pulled him over. But does that automatically lead to the conclusion that this person who's driving the vehicle is in possession of marijuana or under the influence of marijuana? Those are other questions that sort of go against this idea that at that moment, just because they smelled marijuana emanating from the vehicle, that they had probable cause to arrest the driver either for possession or perhaps for driving under the influence.
Now, this is clearly not a slam dunk case because some courts on the way up agreed that no, police didn't have probable cause. There's a 4-3 majority on the state Supreme Court agreed, oh, yes, they did have probable cause. How often do we end up in these sort of gray areas of probable cause in the courts?
Yeah, so probable cause is, as you just said, it is a gray area. It is a very factually specific determination that police officers are asked to make. And courts honestly have trouble, drawing clear lines in this area, because you want to give law enforcement some flexibility here. You anticipate that they will take into account all of the factors that they are observing and use their common sense and try to come to a conclusion about whether or not they think a crime was probably committed. But there are so many different factual scenarios that can arise when police are investigating potential crimes. It's hard for a court to give them clear direction. This, however, is one of those instances where at least the majority is giving police officers pretty clear direction, which is if they smell marijuana, that in and of itself seems to be enough for them to make an arrest.
John, a layperson might look at this and work backwards. Okay, ultimately, the police found fentanyl and cocaine in this person's possession when they did a more intense search than the initial pat-down. So in hindsight, that legitimizes the search in the first place because they did find something. That doesn't really justify things in the way probable cause is defined, as I understand it. Do I have that right?
Yes, I mean, you're correct. I mean, you cannot work backwards, right? Police officers can't decide to overstep reasonable grounds to commit a search and then say, but we did find something, so that makes what we did okay. No, if police officers engage in aggressive searches or seizures of people when they don't have probable cause to make an arrest, then the law actually recognizes that any evidence that they recover because of that unlawful, unjustified search or arrest, that evidence can be suppressed in a court of law, that can be thrown out. And so just because they find something after the fact is not enough of a justification to say that they were acting reasonably when they decided to conduct the search. It has to be based on what they know at the time they decide to make an arrest or initiate a search, not from what they learn after the fact.
Talking to John Gross, clinical associate professor of law at UW-Madison. He directs the university's Public Defender Project. We're looking at probable cause in Wisconsin, probable cause for police searches after a state Supreme Court ruling on the issue saying that, yeah, the smell of marijuana coming from a car is probable cause enough to search the car, the person who was in the car. You could join in with your thoughts, maybe your experiences, at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Let's bring on a caller. Bill is with us in Milwaukee. Bill, hi.
Hello, everybody. I do not smoke marijuana in my car, but I've been driving where the people ahead of me are. That smoke gets in my car. Now, what if some cop stops me, sticks his head in my window, and smells that? And he's supposed to grab me and search me?
Bill, thanks for the call. Now, in the case before the Supreme Court, John, the officers had described it, I think, as an overwhelming smell of marijuana or pervasive. Could, in Bill's instance, sort of a secondhand smoke, literally, justify a police search?
Well, I hope it wouldn't, but I think when you look at the language of this decision, it does send the message to officers that if they happen to smell marijuana, that's enough. Now, it could be, as the caller suggested, could be secondhand smoke. It could be from somebody else smoking in the vehicle earlier in the day, or even before that, if the odor lingers. So that's the real concern here, right? The real concern is that just because officers might credibly say, I think I smell marijuana, does that really entitle them to conduct an arrest and a search of the person and a search of the vehicle? Is it really reasonable to jump to the conclusion that the mere odor suggests the presence of marijuana at that moment?
Thanks a lot for that call, Bill. Now, John, I suspect some people might be listening with an assumption that police are going to abuse the concept of probable cause and massage it to justify any search they want to do. And some people are listening, thinking that police are going to be well-intentioned and, you know, use it appropriately. Do we have any sense of how probable cause is used in practice on average by police departments?
So, I mean, I would say that most law enforcement officers are trying to make a good faith effort based on all the facts and circumstances to figure out whether or not they truly have probable cause to make an arrest or conduct a search. But I think there's also a legitimate concern about an officer being able to claim that they happen to smell marijuana. I mean, as a defense attorney for most of my career, it's almost impossible to challenge that in court. I can't go back in time and test the area around the vehicle to see whether or not it did smell like marijuana. By the time a defense attorney gets a case like this, that odor has completely dissipated. So it's really giving an officer a blank check. If the officer wants to just claim that they smelled marijuana, it's very difficult to challenge that in court. Now, of course, as in this case, when the officer says they smell marijuana, but they don't find any in the vehicle or on the person, well, that might undercut the officer's credibility. But ultimately, you're still asking a judge to, you know, you're asking a judge to consider whether or not the officer is lying to them. And that is a heavy burden to me in a courtroom.
Talking to John Gross, clinical associate professor of law at UW-Madison. He directs the university's Public Defender Project. And we're looking at a ruling from Wisconsin's Supreme Court on probable cause in a case that involved a search after officers say they smelled marijuana in a car. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What questions do you have about probable cause, how it works here in Wisconsin? Do you agree with this state Supreme Court decision? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our talk about probable cause and police searches with John Gross, director of UW-Madison's Public Defender Project. A ruling on that issue from the state Supreme Court came out earlier this week. You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your questions about probable cause, maybe your experiences. 800-642-1234 is the number to call. Back to your calls now. Jim is with us in Watertown. Jim, hi.
Hello. Thanks for taking the call. I mean, there's a gray area here, but I think that the courts dropped the ball on this one. Here in Wisconsin, what is it, an ounce, up to an ounce, and it's a misdemeanor? Why are they searching this guy, like, and as in getting ready to arrest him? And, I mean, and this is all in, you know, if you're thinking that all the police are going to do the right thing. You know, for a smell, I think that it should be padded. Now, granted, if you're able to look at what happened after the fact, yeah, the guy had a dangerous substance that needs to be taken off the street. Absolutely. And so, you know, if you're able to look at that, yes, you know, he needed to get arrested. But
Jim, thanks a lot for the call. John, he points out that possession is a misdemeanor, but it is a misdemeanor that can result in jail time. So that potentially could lead to an arrest. Do I have that right?
No, that's correct. I think we should be very clear that possession of marijuana in Wisconsin is still illegal in Wisconsin, even though some of our neighboring states have changed their laws. And Wisconsin does allow for certain hemp products and CBD products, which are a derivative, but don't contain the active chemical THC that is what makes marijuana illegal. So a person can be arrested for it. It is a misdemeanor, typically. So we are still talking about a crime.
Jim, thanks for that call at 800-642-1234. Martha is with us now in Menominee. Martha, hi.
Hey, Rob. Say, I'm kind of with Jim on this one. The this claim, you know, I thought I smelled marijuana, sounds a lot like, quote, I thought I saw a gun, you know, close quote. I think it's too general and too able to be used to abuse for abuse. I think the cops can lie too easily with this. And the criminal justice system is already stacked against the defendant. And so I think that there should have to be something in addition to that, like not wearing your seatbelt or a gun that I thought I saw was visible or whatever in addition for this to be probable cause.
Martha, thanks for the call. John.
Yeah, well, I have to say that this issue has come up in numerous states who have either legalized marijuana to some degree or have also legalized hemp or CBD products that smell exactly like marijuana. And I think the Wisconsin court decision here is a bit of an outlier, frankly. Other courts who have considered this under a similar set of circumstances have said the fact that we have something that is legal to possess that smells like marijuana means that just the odor of marijuana is not enough to establish probable cause to arrest. And so I think this decision is a little out of step with what other state Supreme Courts have been finding when they've addressed this same issue.
Thanks for the call, Martha. John, though, a lot of these probable cause cases, they're going to involve something that involves something subjective on the part of the arresting officer, right? You might perceive somebody is behaving in a threatening way. Somebody else might look and say, I don't think they're being that threatening. We put some kind of subjective judgment onto police. I don't think there's any choice in that. Is that right?
That's true. I mean, you want officers to be able to respond to the threat of criminal activity in proactive ways. And you want them to take reasonable steps to address public safety and the various scenarios that they can come can encounter on a daily basis, from traffic stops to reports of domestic violence. It's hard to give them, you know, a precise calculation as to when there is or is not probable cause. But I mean, that being said, I think a lot of times if an officer misperceives something and makes an arrest in sort of an abundance of caution, you know, witnesses can be interviewed and there's a burden placed on proof beyond a reasonable doubt at trial. But when you talk about situations where there's contraband, right, that the item itself that the officer is attempting to locate is a crime, whether it's drugs or a gun, these are areas where we might want to really be cautious when evaluating whether or not an officer has probable cause, because the recovery of the item itself constitutes the crime.
Thanks for that call, Molly. Molly is with us now in Madison. Molly, hi. Are you there, Molly?
The police are here to protect us. Whether or not they smell something, shouldn't they just be allowed to protect us? Or since it's off the street?
Molly, thanks for the call. Molly was breaking up there, but I think leaning toward erring on the side of, hey, let police make these judgments if they perceive this as a need to protect the public.
Yeah, and I know a lot of people feel that way, and people often view, you know, evidence being suppressed or thrown out as a sort of legal technicality. But look, there's also important personal privacy, Fourth Amendment rights for people. People don't want to be pulled over and detained and have their car searched over nothing, right? On the suspicion that the officers might recover some type of drugs or an illegal weapon. So there has to be a balance here between wanting to protect personal privacy, wanting to protect people from police harassment, from racial profiling, and also, you know, legitimate law enforcement efforts to remove dangerous, harmful drugs or weapons from our streets.
Molly, thanks for the call. Sorry we lost that connection. Shane is with us now in Madison. Shane, hi.
Hey, how's it going? I just wanted to say on the topic that I find it very close to borderline to where it could be damaging to people's protected rights of random searches and seizures, that if you could just basically do it off of subjectively hearsay, I just find that rather inappropriate. I had a experience a few years back where I was pulled over in a vehicle I had just purchased. I didn't really live at the best side of town, and within the first like 16 hours of having this vehicle, I'm driving around and they're like, oh, well, we see this vehicle, it's a nice vehicle in a bad neighborhood, and we're kind of smelling marijuana. I'm like, well, they ended up keeping me outside at negative degree temperatures in a t-shirt, finding nothing and wasting a bunch of my time.
Shane, thanks for the call. Just in our last minute or so, John, Shane raising the concern that if we allow too much leeway, we might be sacrificing some of our rights.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, as I mentioned before, we want to strike this balance. We do want officers to be able to have flexibility to make these difficult decisions they have to make in the moment to police harmful substances and dangerous weapons and get them off the street. But we also have to honor people's privacy rights, their Fourth Amendment rights, their rights to be free from an unreasonable search and seizure, which is in our Constitution, our Fourth Amendment. And the question really is whether or not the court struck the right balance in this particular case. And I'm a little skeptical that this was the right way to resolve the issue.
Shane, thanks for the call. And John, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us today.
It's been my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
That's John Gross, Clinical Associate Professor of Law at UW-Madison. He directs the university's Public Defender Project. He joined us for a look at a new Wisconsin State Supreme Court ruling on probable cause for police searches. Coming up Monday here on Central Time, housing prices have been high for years in Wisconsin, and higher interest rates have raised the cost of mortgages. We'll get the latest on the housing market here in the state. And Wisconsin has lots of great river journeys, from short paddles to multi-day river camping, even a three-hour tour. Get some advice to get started or share your favorite expeditions in the state. You can respond on either of those topics, actually. You can email ideas@WPR.org. That's ideas@WPR.org. Love to hear your experiences on the housing market or on the river. Heck, both if you've done them both lately. Again, email ideas@WPR.org and then join those conversations and more Monday here on Central Time.